This episode is brought to you by Yotta Energy. That's Y-O-T-T-A Energy. We all know energy storage is key to deploying renewables at scale. I've seen many energy storage solutions for commercial buildings over my years in climate tech, but not as impressive as Yotta's. Yotta Energy's PV-coupled ecosystem of solar plus storage solutions simply integrates within the standard solar installation process. Even better, their integrated storage technology can enable up to 60% more solar to be deployed on commercial buildings. With commercial buildings consuming 35% of electricity, that means Yotta is making a serious dent in CO2 emissions. With the electrification of everything revolution underway, Yotta Energy is poised to meet the growing demands of electrification by sizing solar plus storage resources to recharge electric vehicles as they future-proof buildings into distributed energy sites powering the grid of the future. Find out more at yottaenergy.com and follow Yotta on Twitter at Yotta Energy. This episode is also brought to you by Aether Diamonds. That's A-E-T-H-E-R Diamonds. If you're planning to propose or purchase a timeless gift for your partner, I couldn't think of a better purchase than Aether Diamonds. Aether Diamonds are the world's most sustainable diamonds and the only diamonds that are actually good for the planet. Aether creates the world's first positive impact diamonds made from captured CO2. In fact, every carat of Aether Diamonds offsets your personal carbon footprint for over a year. These are 100% real diamonds with a real impact. They're some of the highest quality diamonds you can buy and are certified by IGI, the world's largest independent laboratory for testing and grading gemstones and fine jewelry. Now you're no longer stuck having to choose between mined and regular lab-grown diamonds, both of which harm the environment. Aether offers the only truly sustainable diamonds on the market, requiring no ethical or environmental trade-offs. In other words, they're the only guilt-free diamonds available in the world. To learn more about these revolutionary diamonds from Aether, visit their website at aetherdiamonds.com and follow on Twitter at Aether Diamonds. Hello, my fellow climate warriors. This is Matt Myers, and welcome to another episode of Climate Tech Cocktails, where we grab a drink or two with best-in-class climate tech founders to learn from their life journeys, dive into bleeding-edge technologies, and have a laugh while we're at it. My guest today is Ryan Pandya, co-founder and CEO of Perfect Day. You can find Ryan at Ryan Pandya, that's P-A-N-D-Y-A, and Perfect Day on Twitter at Perfect Day Foods. Ryan Pandya is the co-founder and CEO of Perfect Day, a consumer biology company on a mission to create a kinder, greener tomorrow by developing new ways to make the foods you love today, starting in the dairy aisle. Ryan, in partnership with co-founder Parimal Gandhi, leads a diverse team of scientists, engineers, chefs, food developers, and storytellers who are working in harmony to make their dream of animal-free dairy a reality. Perfect Day, named one of Time's 2020 Best Inventions, is currently pioneering a new category in the dairy market by using fermentation to create proprietary, flora-made dairy protein without a single cow. Named one of Forbes 30 Under 30 in 2019, Ryan is committed to making delicious, nutritious food that does less damage to our planet. Without further ado, enjoy the show. Ryan Pandya, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
What are we drinking today?
We have Perfect Day, I think, whiskey sours. At least in my case, a bourbon and sour mix. How about right. For you?
Yeah, I feel so honored. This is the first podcast episode where the guest actually sends a house-crafted mixer to my house in preparation for the show.
To be completely honest, I might not even know all the details about this. Like, is it meant to foam? Should I be whipping it or something? And I only ask because I know that we have cocktails that you can whip a nice, like, almost egg white foam out of the protein.
Right. Yeah. So that's the intention, I think, with this. And so right now,
so when I shake it, it'll do that.
Yeah. So right now, Ryan is adding the Perfect Day whiskey sour mixture to a bourbon, and then he's going to shake it. And I could play spoiler alert here. It basically looks foamy like a whiskey sour, and it tastes like a whiskey sour.
Pretty cool.
Smells like one. It's amazing.
So two bourbons and three mixes. All right, hold on.
Yeah. I'm pouring mine out.
Okay. It's funny, I thought all of this was how they all go. Where like the company, I don't know, where like we have a special cocktail.
We're getting fancy here. That's the thing, right? We've got like this these specially made. Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, you
this is the part that I always screw up, right? Because I'll hit it and then what? I just shake it.
Yeah. So you have the top on over the part, top of the shaker, right? Yeah.
There you go. Oh, you know what? Yeah. I think I just don't have messed up one. When I do that with my with the one we have at home, I mean, now I guess we have this one at home. Thank you. Perfect day. It just makes a mess over there.
Yeah. There you go. Shake it ready for like, you know,
that doesn't feel 10, like it'll 15
seconds, gets it all cold, and then you're good to go. You just pour it out into a cup. It's really good.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, and I don't know if you got these. I got these. Almost forgot.
Yeah, the little toothpicks?
Dude, your chef actually sent maraschino cherries to my house.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, I got the toothpicks, but I'm actually not sure I got the cherries.
Yeah, this is when you know you've made it as a podcast. You get to do something like this. You know, you get cherries sent to your house. That's when you know.
I have the stupidest problem now where I just can't. Oh, never mind. All right, but hold on. And we're not on video though, right? Because look at that foam. Oh,
you can. Yeah, I know. I wish we could see it.
Wow.
I must have to take a photo of it or something.
Yeah. I'll tell you, man, it doesn't get old for me.
It doesn't.
Look at that. Yeah. Wow.
So is this just something that you guys are playing around with?
The like cocktail foam?
Yeah.
I think we've hypothesized since the very beginning that this protein has every reason to behave like egg white proteins. And then we've known for a couple of years, because we've tried it, that it does. But now we're at the point where I guess like we're actually showing it to people and talking about it, which is really cool. Yeah, and like, cool. You know, because what that implies is that our team has enough now confidence that they've pressure tested it, right? We know that when we ship it to you, it's going to work and you'll get that foam. And here it is.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Cheers, man.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you again for joining. I greatly appreciate it. Cheers. Yeah. L'chaim, as we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do you think?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it is really good. Cool. Well, I want to... this is really good. I want to start really with how we first connected. I don't know if you remember this, but I think it was back in January, February of 2016.
Really?
And Isha spoke at South by Southwest Eco, and I was totally blown away by
it. Is that the one that I did with like the Soylent founder?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
And so I like tracked Isha down, we started talking, and I was running this conference, like an investment summit with startups, and so she connected me to you guys. And you were Moofree at the time.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So she connected me to two guys for a company called Moofree out in Berkeley. And we had a great conversation. You guys were like, oh, we're a little too early, I think, for participating in this conference, blah, 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 blah. That was it. And I've like tracked Isha a little bit over time, connected with her once in a while. And then I went through this process where I started to look up some of the companies that I connected with like years ago. And I saw you guys, and then you had changed your name to Perfect Day. And I was crap. Right? Like, I think that, you know, the early 2016 days were, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was just like you guys hadn't really raised much money at that point.
Totally. There were very few of us at the time, right? It was like under 10 people.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks we're crazy at the time.
Right.
We don't have any money. We don't have any progress. We're certainly not making cocktails with egg white foam. Right?
Sent by your company chef.
Right. Totally. So I love that is how far back your like familiarity with us goes. Yeah.
And I bring that up because I was looking you guys up on latest news and stuff for the podcast. And I was like, first I was like, oh, wow. Holy moly. They've raised like, what, $350+ million. And they've got Bob Iger on their board, which I want to talk about later, but I know everybody wants to. But I'm like, holy moly, they've raised much money. They've got Bob Iger on their board. They've come this far. And I'm like, that already blew me away. And then I was looking again at the news, and I saw you guys raised another $350 million late September. And that puts you over $700 million, and you're now a unicorn company, right? I don't know if you guys are like the unicorn gig. And so I want to stop jabbering away here for a second, but I'm trying to set this up with when I saw that, and you guys are even talking about doing an IPO. I'm like, hold on a second. This is the same company that 4 or 5 years ago, when I was connected with them, people I spoke with about these types of technologies and products, they thought it was kind of a joke and some far off science fiction future that we'll never reach. And you'd be crazy to put money into this. And that's not the way I felt about it, but that was the way a lot of people reacted when I talked to them about companies such as Moofree. And now we're sitting at a point where you all are obviously raising enough capital to scale in very big ways and get into grocery stores and restaurants, so on and so forth around the country. And it just made me pinch myself. I'm like, wow, the future is now, kind of like Hudsucker Proxy. And what does that mean for you all and for the whole, let's say, alternative animal-free product movement and industry as a whole?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I don't know when this, you know, airs relative to the other ones. I know you've talked to Andras, right?
Yes.
Like, would we expect that people listening to this have heard that one already as well? You know, we got started in 2014. One of the first founders we ever talked to, thanks to Isha's introduction, because this was a very small world in 2014. One of the first founders we ever talked to was Andras, you know, whose company has done pioneering things in the cell-based meat world.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had been in touch for years. Like I was over at Modern Meadow when I was in college. I had applied to them as an intern because I did chemical engineering and I was working on tissue engineered meat in college at Tufts. And I kind of had a hunch that there was a lot of challenge ahead, like both in terms of technology, in terms of scaling the engineering, but also the communications and the marketing side. And like, how does this make sense to consumers? What you just mentioned of being laughed out of a room or, you know, like it's a laughable concept, right? And here was Modern Meadow doing what we perceived as something even harder than just making milk. Because I mean, milk is a liquid, whereas meat is like a three-dimensional thing. It's so much more to bite into, literally.
No, totally. And now we're in this new world. What inspired you two, Paramal, who's not here, to start Perfect Day?
I think what is the making of any dream job? It was the combination of a personal passion and a professional vision, maybe, or like a view that we could use our education to do something real. Now, I'll start by saying Paramal and I met in early 2014 with a bizarrely overlapping biography. I was 22, he was 23. We're both early 20s bioengineers living in America with Indian backgrounds. Like, we've both studied engineering and we've both gone from eating all kinds of food to going vegetarian and then going vegan, having too much trouble going vegan and starting to think about how bioengineering could help make milk without animals. I mean, that is too many things to have in common with a person and not become friends, right?
Right.
And at that point in time, you know, again, both of us had the technical background and the personal background where we were interested in this world of, hey, I mean, soy milk is fine, but can't we do better than that, right?
Yeah.
And like tofu is fine, but it's not fucking cheese, right? Like I want the real thing. And it was a very optimistic time in 2000s, right? I mean, like Obama's in office, whatever. Anything can happen, you know?
Right.
Technology can save us. Social media is a good thing, and you want to go on Facebook. Like, all things are optimistic. Meta Inc. And so we had this feeling that, like, yes, it is inevitable. I still feel this way. It is inevitable that in 50 years, 100 years, whatever, if you pick a far enough time in the future, like, of course, we'll get meat not from animals, but we'll still be able to eat the foods that we all love. In the same exact way that, like, of course, like, no one rides a horse to, like, get from New York to Boston. Like, you'd have to be a real weirdo for that to be how you choose to get from New York to Boston, right? You're not going to do that. You could, but you'd pay a lot of money, and it'd be a really happy horse, right, which wasn't the case when it was the default. Maybe that could happen in meat, but very few people were thinking, what about milk? And the reason that we did was because I think, unlike most people, you have to imagine this is a small community of people that are thinking about bioengineering to replace meat, and within which very, very few people have actually tried to go vegan. These are vegetarians.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When you try to go vegan, you're like, oh, holy shit, this is way harder for as a consumer. If I want to go vegetarian, I've got like, I don't know, eggplant parmesan. There's so many things, you know, whatever you can eat. But the vegan one is like such a step change, more challenging, which is interesting because it is a step change easier to do technologically. So we both kind of arrived at that point and kind of looked around. We talked to Isha, who you know, and we're like, hey, look, there's like 150 people in the whole world that are thinking about using biotech to make meat. Who's doing the milk? Because I'm a 22-year-old. I don't know a goddamn thing, but I want to go work for that person. I want to contribute however I can. And she's like, good luck, dude. No one's doing it. No one's ever had that idea. And we went on Google. Like, you could even look yourself, right? What was on the internet in 2014? Nothing. No. Not even like, this would be cool, but it's infeasible. Nothing. No one has ever had this idea before. And I will live and die never again having an idea that you can't find on the internet. Right? Isn't that wild? No one had ever talked about this before. So we're like, maybe it could work.
Yeah. And it is working.
It is. It is. Yeah. And exactly. I mean, you know, look, we haven't made it yet. We're not there yet. But the product is real. It's in the market. It's nationwide. It's actually in Hong Kong and Singapore as well. And I think I can now say, as we hoped, as we predicted, it has been easier to do this than meat without animals. It's easier to talk about. It's easier to get to retail. It's easier to scale all of it.
Super interesting. I want to say that what you just talked about going from vegetarian to vegan is really ringing true to me, because I'm from the state of Texas and I love steak. I love burgers, so on and so forth. I've actually begun my vegetarian journey a month ago and did a blog post on it. And I say vegetarian for precisely the reason that you pointed out, that it's a lot easier to do that than to go vegan. Don't take my Humboldt fog cheese from me, right? You can't do that. I can find some pretty good meat substitutes now, but dairy, a lot more difficult. And as you know, dairy is used in so much stuff. And one other thing I want to point out, I went to, it's also in the blog post, I went to on date night to this restaurant called Original Joe's. And we sat down, we've eaten there many times, and they handed us the menu, and it's a very like long Italian menu. There were literally two entrees I could eat being a vegetarian. And one of those was eggplant parmesan. And so that's what I ate. Right. Yep. And so I'm right now
exploring.
What was the other one? I think it was like just a fettuccine with
but like that almost certainly also had dairy in it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So there was nothing but steamed vegetables that I could have at that restaurant that had neither meat nor dairy in it.
Yeah. And the implication that people that care about the planet or care about animals want to eat fucking steamed vegetables is just like not how anything works. Exactly.
Exactly. Like, I care about the planet a lot, obviously, and I want to eat things that taste close enough to what I'm used to eating. I could still enjoy it. I don't want to suffer. I know it sounds bad.
Right.
We probably should suffer, but I don't think we have to suffer. We don't need to suffer. And that's what you guys are doing, right? Or you all are doing, your team. It's like showing that you don't need to give up your love of dairy necessarily. It's just not from animals.
Yeah. And it continues to be our hope that we are playing a role as a stepping stone for society and the market to get more comfortable with the idea that that same thing might be true for meat too. You get your chicken parm rather than eggplant parm, and both chicken and the parm are animal free. We can do that. We can get there.
Can you help me understand the difference between dairy free, plant-based, and animal free?
Yeah. Dairy free, plant-based, and animal free. To any normal human, you just said the same thing three times, right?
Okay. I'm just like, okay, let's say I go to the grocery store. I see regular milk. There's skim milk. And then now we have plant-based ones like almonds, you should definitely not do oats, which a lot of people are doing now, so on and so forth. And then you might have an option like I don't think you do, of something that is neither really from a cow or from a plant, right?
I see the confusion. I get it. And this world is changing fast enough that, like, I hesitate to tell you my mental framework for it. I will, but I'm like, oh shoot! Like, by the time that propagates, there will be a new one. But I think what I'm about to tell you is actually pretty future proof. Okay.
Okay.
So here's the framework. Okay.
Yeah.
We are all very comfortable with the idea that there are things from animals and things from plants.
Right.
So, like, we exist in a dichotomy right now. It's either animal or it's plant. Right. And I'm going to introduce to you another axis. There's animal, there's plant, and there's two other options, okay? Animal, plant, microbe. You get something produced purely through fermentation. That's what we're doing. So, like, we're actually using microflora in a fermentation tank to make something. And it's different than a beer or a kombucha or a whatever that you and I think of as fermentation, because we're actually using microflora to make a very specific animal protein. It's never been possible until now. It's a new thing. It's going to be confusing. But option three is microflora. Option four is the weird one where you actually grow animal tissue.
Right.
Like, that's the one. I mean, and weirdly, like, people are more familiar with that because there's a lot more being talked about the growing meat without animals thing. That's what we call cell-based.
Right.
Okay? So if you wanted to make cell-based milk, you could do it. You'd have to grow an udder outside of a cow. I mean, that's the way to do it, right? I mean, you've got mammalian cells, like, doing their mammal thing, literally mammary glands. We're not going that way. And we, you can imagine, we thought very hard. Like, that was our default thinking in 2014. We know people are making meat using tissue engineering. Why wouldn't we tissue engineer an udder and make milk? Because you know immediately that as soon as you do that, it'll have the fat, it'll have the protein, it'll have the lactose. Maybe you don't want the lactose, actually, right? But it's the way to do it kind of the right way. It's just extremely difficult to engineer that and get the cost targets you need.
Mm-hmm.
The other way is just to use a fermentation tank and use simple plant inputs and have microflora convert it into the same exact thing we do to make medicine today, insulin, all these things. We can now make milk protein.
I think it's really important, I'm sure you agree, to help educate consumers on the difference between the two, because I think people are hearing a lot of cell-based this and that, but it might get confused with products that are fermented, which is a very big difference.
It's super different. Yeah.
Right. Will I go into a aisle that has the dairy products and it'll say regular old school dairy, cell-based dairy, or fermented dairy? Like, will I see these labels with options that are clearly distinguishable to me?
Okay. Let me tell you how I actually navigate this, right? Because even the dairy industry, even the traditional legacy sort of big food companies and beverage companies, like, no one's thinking about the way you talk about food as being, oh, this came from a cow. Like, even dairy companies don't think of it that way anymore, right? We go and meet, I've been in the boardroom of dairy companies that are saying, ignore the black and white photos of grandpa milking a cow. We're not an animal company anymore. We're a food company. We're a protein company, right? So, like, my analogy to you is going to be, does it matter to you whether you, when you book a flight from point A to point B, do you care if the plane is powered by a propeller or a jet engine? We don't even know the difference, right? But I know that if I'm going to fly, like, a short little hop, it's probably going to be a little propeller plane, right? And if it's a long haul, it's probably going to have jets. Maybe it'll have four of them. Like, we don't care. We're trying to get from point A to point B. And food and beverage companies think that way. They're like, you don't care if it came from a cow or not. You want your protein, or you want your tasty, yummy thing in the morning, or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And if they can deliver that better using peas than cows, they'll do that. Or almonds, they'll do that. It just turns out that plants have never, and I don't think will ever, be able to do that. The interesting thing will be when technologies are now coming to the forefront that can actually make it indistinguishable. And you see what I'm getting at? Like,
yeah.
I think it wouldn't be so much of a distinction made to the consumer, because they'll say, you can get the best darn thing you need for your current want.
Right.
And if you look on the back in the fine print, like, you'll see the transparent truth of it. But very few people really care if they're going to get their needs solved.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. And I do, though, wonder, and you guys will find this out, well, everybody will find out relatively quickly, like, if people do have issues with consuming cell-based anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not knocking on the industry, and I think it needs to happen. It's just, like, some people philosophically might not want to consume something that's cell-based, right? They prefer Definitely. To go with something that's fermented. That's just like my general observation.
No, I think you might be right about that. And I, as you can probably imagine, I've frequented like the vegan subreddit for more than 10 years. Like I'm deep in this stuff, and it is not infrequent to see people who say, look, the cell-based stuff is different. It comes from an animal. You're growing real animal tissue. I don't think I want that. Whereas if you're using microflora that have never been in touch with literally the only time we've ever interacted with a cow has been to like pet them at a sanctuary. Like we literally zero interaction. Even the DNA itself is like fully printed. It's not even animal derived. So they are different. But to that, Matt, also, maybe the better analogy isn't like propeller to jet. It's like airplane to like magical space plane from sci-fi. I'm sorry, but like, look, I have nothing but respect and like, I hope the best for everyone working on meat without animals. You know, I've been a fan of it for like my whole professional life, but I don't think the timelines are going to overlap the way that we sometimes think, you know?
No, absolutely. And one last thing I want to throw out there. I think that noting that this is lactose free is actually a big deal because I was looking at y'all's website and I didn't realize that was this percentage, but what, 70% of people are allergic to lactose?
Yeah.
Which makes total sense for me. And so the fact that they can have a lactose-free dairy product and it still tastes like a regular dairy product, I think is actually a big deal.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's part of why, like, I don't know, even though maybe five plus years ago, one of my worries about starting this company was that we're inherently taking a reductionist approach to food, right? We're making a single ingredient, and to turn it into anything, you have to add stuff to it. And now you have a long ingredient list, and it's not how maybe people want to view food. You want like your single ingredient, whole food, complex thing, except milk has stuff in it that you don't want. By making just the part we want, you get to do away with the lactose, the cholesterol, the hormones, the, I don't know, in some cases, antibiotics. I think dairy is uniquely suited to a reductionist approach because the industry already does that too. Like you can see so many sliced and diced dairy ingredients in the grocery store. If you've ever seen whey protein or caseinate or like non-fat milk solids or whatever, right?
Yeah. Let's take a step back and talk about what your protein is made out of. Maybe not only what it's made out of, but how you all got there. Where does dairy coming from and how did it get there? And what is flora? Spoiler alert, it's a fungi. And what did you learn from using a fungi versus a yeast, which is commonly used?
So there's a couple of really good questions built into there. Let me start by saying, would we view milk as being made out of cow? Not really.
No,
made from cows, right? So it's so important that we lean on that analogy a little bit because it's true here. It's not made out of flora. It's made from them. They are the animal analog doing the biology magic to turn, instead of grass into milk, simplified grass into simplified milk. And they're a simplified cow. Okay, so bear with me, I'll repeat that. A cow is a complex animal eating a complex plant and making a complex milk. Okay, we've simplified all three. Now I've just got a single cell eating just a simple plant carbohydrate, literally sugar, and converting it into just the protein from milk. But the sort of magic biology conversion thing is still the case. We're not eating fungi or flora. They're doing the biology for us. And the reason that we think, I mean, the reason that it has turned out that fungi make more sense than yeast, although technically yeast are taxonomically are fungi, okay? Yeast are a type of fungus, but the ones that we use, let me take a second and explain this to you, okay? So you and I are animals. We have to eat food and bring the food into our stomach where there's hydrochloric acid and there's enzymes, right? Like these are things we never really think about, but like, yeah, you take your food in and there's enzymes in there.
Yeah.
Fungi don't work that way. They digest outside their body. So they're sitting on like on the edge of a tree, like bark or something, and they're actually excreting enzymes outside of their body to break down their environment and then get the broken down stuff into them. Mm-hmm. They digest outside of their body. And the way they do that is by producing a huge amount of protein in the form of digestive enzymes that they then export from themselves. So you can imagine, I mean, we're not the first ones to think of this. Like 55 years ago, people were using fungi to make enzymes industrially because you're like, oh, this is a microflora in the environment that's breaking down the cellulose of our tent. And we actually need to use cellulose to start the biofuels industry and all these other things. So people have been growing these things in tanks for years and years and years. What we did, we came along and said, hold on, if I feed this guy enough sugar, can he produce a different protein? He does, like, it doesn't need to be an enzyme anymore. It can be whatever protein we want, right? Mm-hmm. So that's exactly what we do. We put these microflora in tanks and tell them, make as much protein as you possibly can, except two things. It's going to be a different protein than you normally use to get your food, and we'll give you your food anyway. And everyone's happy.
How do you tell them to do that?
They do it automatically based on whatever is in, like, this gets at my weakness because I'm like a computer nerd. Okay. And I'm reaching towards like computer analogies that won't land. But let me put it this way, right? Like, you know, your mailman is going to like every house on the block, right? Yeah. So like if you put a note to your mailman in a certain mailbox, you know he's gonna read it.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that, I don't know, let me like really abuse the analogy. You've got a neighbor that just sends out a ton of mail every day. And so when that postal employee goes to your neighbor's house, you know, whatever's in that mailbox, they're going to take it all. I don't know.
Right.
You put something else in that mailbox and you just know it's going out. This is where the analogy breaks apart. Like there's a transactional element to the biology where it's important that we feed them sugar so that they no longer need to produce enzymes to get their sugar.
Got it.
I truly don't know if any of that landed.
I think so. I'll listen back to it and I think I'll go, yeah, that makes total sense. The male person and yeah, I'll listen back. I'll be like, I totally get it now. But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it's basically you are coding,
yeah,
recoding the DNA to do something to produce a protein that you want it to produce.
You know, and actually like maybe you'll forgive me for like giving it a swing with a computer analogy, but I won't go too in the weeds, right? Like your computer's going to run a certain file every single day, mm-hmm, and like, yeah, just it's going to hit enter on that file. So you, yeah, switch what file it's opening. That's all, like it's going to, okay, do it anyway, right?
Right, right.
Do this one instead of that one. That's all we're saying.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. That was a good one. You know? I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That definitely landed.
Look, I'm 7.5 years into this now. Like I'm two in the weeds.
Speaking of weeds, I want to get out of the weeds.
Sure.
And this is climate tech cocktails. And can you help explain why it's important to not consume dairy made by animals for the environment?
You know, I'll nitpick a little bit and say that's not how I would word it. If we could all teleport tomorrow, I'm not going to say that we're irresponsible for flying from point A to point B. It's how we can get around today. But we're all going to be on team teleportation if it's a super sustainable, climate tech friendly way of getting around tomorrow. What we have developed here, no one saw coming, no one thought was possible, but we like somehow created a way to make the same exact thing that cows can make dramatically more efficiently. And I'm sure you've seen the numbers from my team, but I mean, it's like 97% more greenhouse gas efficient, 99% water efficient, similar on the energy. Like we can do this. And it doesn't mean that you should feel bad for consuming cow's milk. And that's not our argument at all. It's that we've developed something that is quantifiably going to be less impactful on the environment. And we hope it's a way for the big industries and big companies out there that we know care, or at least say that they care, and we hope they're right. Cool. Let's do it now.
Yeah. And what about the proteins that you all are producing, or the dairy that you're producing, nutrient-wise? How does this compare to the milk or the cheese that people are consuming today? I think that's also really important for people. It's a question they'll ask. And It's something also that the dairy industry has driven into people's minds with the, you know, drink a glass of milk a day when you're growing up, so on and so forth. Like, it's the healthy thing to do. Like, you must have milk and dairy. So people might be afraid of switching because they might not be getting the nutrients that they need.
Yeah. And I think when we look at how the dairy industry talks about the nutrition of milk, it is just so, by far, it's about the protein. It's about, you can have all the almond milk you want, but there's like two or three almonds in a single carton of almond milk, and there's very little protein. What we're able to do is bring the nutritive strength of milk into this non-animal world. And yeah. I can already tell, like, we've had conversations like this a million times. The people that really know their way in and out of dairy chemistry will tell us, and it's not a bad argument, look, but there's the milk fat, there's nutrition in there, it's not just saturated fat, there's important things in there. It's true. And that's why we're also trying to create animal fat without animals. But even then, like, you want to do that without the cholesterol, which kind of comes for the ride. There's a milk fat globule membrane. This isn't interesting to anyone, but around the milk fat, like in milk, there's this very interesting structured membrane around it that has something complex biological effect. You know, but at a certain point, like, the food industry has structured itself in such a way that you get those benefits from any number of things. Like, some of those benefits are literally omega fatty acids. And those are in how many things now? The reality is, it's more about macronutrients, because we get our micros everywhere. And the macronutrient of protein is still viewed as a pretty darn important one. And it's just not really present in plant-based milk. But you can get it in Perfect Day's milk.
Again, we're kind of going all over the place, but I want to go back a little bit more to the business side of things.
Yeah, sure.
We kind of touched upon how you and Paramal met. I think we touched upon that it was in Ireland. Was it Ireland?
The first time we ever met in person was in Ireland, even though we both lived in the US.
And you guys are part of an incubator.
Yeah, yeah.
And then went from that incubator, was it directly to the Bay Area?
Pretty much, yeah.
Who was your first investor?
Our first investor, I mean, I should say the accelerator program itself gave us our first $30,000. But our first external investor was Horizons Ventures. They had also invested in Andras and the Modern Meadow team, which is part of why we knew him and part of why we knew them. You know, a bit of how we benefited from that small world at the very beginning. Horizons is really interesting, and we love them because they aren't like any other investor, even to this day that we've met. They invest with a humanitarian view of what to do with the profits. You might be aware there at both Berkeley and Stanford universities, there's a Li Ka-shing Center. These academic schools are funded by like the profits they make through their investments at Horizons, partially.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm sure there are, you know, other income streams as well, but I know for a fact that like if and when, well, when they profit off of Perfect Day, that'll go directly into things like parks and hospitals and schools, which is just a value alignment that we've been lucky to have, because in the years since, we've been lucky to meet many other kinds of investors, and very few of whom have the kind of values that we feel so resonant with.
And that's really important, especially in the earlier days. And totally. We have a little bit of time here. I want to actually talk a little bit about maybe some of the tougher times, a really tough situation you all might have faced. Because, I mean, we're glossing over like 5 or 6 years here, and it's impossible to pick into 5 or 6 years. And, you know, when I post this, I'll go, oh my gosh, they've raised like all this money. It seems so easy. And I kind of like to have some folks tell a story or a couple stories of maybe a difficult time or two to help those listening realize that the entrepreneurship journey is not all roses. Is there any moment or two that you'd like to share that might be humbling for folks? As an example, Bob Mumgard was on the show, Commonwealth Fusion Systems, and there was a point in time where they were literally selling scrap metal to pay salaries. And now they're backed by Bill Gates and yada, yada, yada. But that was like a really interesting story for people to hear. And so I'll stop jabbering now. But
no, not at all. If you don't mind my asking, at what stage of their journey was that story?
In my recollection, this was really early. This is when they were, I don't know if they're still like working out of MIT, but they're working out of MIT, and they were funded by, they got a lot of funding from the Department of Energy, and suddenly they just pulled all the funding. I think that was the scenario. And so this was probably, I would say, maybe a couple of years into their journey.
But it's funny, right? Like, everyone wants to tell the, like, very, very beginning story. You ask someone, like, what tribulations have you been through in your life? And their answer is, well, when I was a toddler, it was tough. Or, like, first grade sucked. And you're like, yeah, but, like, adulthood's tough, too, right? You know? Yeah.
Fair enough.
And maybe, I don't know, but maybe it's tough. And you know, you can imagine, like, I would be thinking, oh, what are all the things I can't say right now? But maybe that's my point, right? There are so many more challenges the later on you go, but it's weird that that's never what founders say when you ask, well, what are the hard parts? You know, I might ask, what's a type of stakeholder related to Perfect Day, be it my family or friends or partner or employees or shareholders or board, that you'd like to wonder about? And I probably have a story about how it went. And
okay.
Right. And the intent isn't to answer any of those, but to reveal that there are that many balls in the air and there will never not be at least one of them that is about to hit the floor.
Would you say then you and Paramal like successfully navigated those issues?
Well, it helps us that we, between the two of us, we have four hands, four arms, right? And so, you know, maybe I'll less abuse this analogy, but I really don't know how single founders do it. I really don't. I mean, it has been so valuable that we have the two of us and that the two of us started off equally nothing. Because you can imagine, right? Like if one of us had been like 10 years into our career and the other one was right out of college, like it'd be tough. It'd be weird, you know, whatever. It would cause its own category of thing that I could never talk about. But like we don't have any such drama to worry about because we were both nowhere and we both have watched this thing go from everyone thinking we're crazy to everyone not thinking we're crazy, but still acting like we're crazy. And maybe in a few years, right. Like people will also act like we're not crazy.
And so in summary, it's been really important to have somebody to complain to.
Totally.
And who totally gets everything they're complaining about.
Yeah. I mean, I can't state it enough. And I guess like, I don't know, to anyone who's thinking of starting a thing or whatever, right? Like there's so many people that are ready to become entrepreneurs or like are about to like try their idea out. Like, I just can't stress enough how important it is to have a partner in your journey. And that partner has to feel like an equal, you know?
I hear you. I mean, here I am on my solo journey. But I could just talk to myself.
Well, you know, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings there. I mean, like you've got me. Hey, but also, you know, honestly, like I know it's hard. Like, please reach out. You know, honestly.
Oh, great, cool. I'll just send you like a one sentence email, you know, with a bunch of expletives, and that's it. Right? You're like, okay.
And I'll be like, I fucking know what you mean, man. Yeah, yeah. Preaching to the choir. Yeah,
totally. So stay on the business track too. Mm-hmm. You all have your first commercial products that have come out this year. And the first one is ice cream. And so why did you all choose ice cream out of all dairy products?
A couple of reasons. I mean, I guess I'll start with the simplest, which is that it was ready. We tried it and it was delicious, right? But the reason that we went from there to actually launching it, you know, it's the difference between like, feeling a crush for someone and wanting to marry them. We were ready to really make the commitment to ice cream being how we went out there because a lot of other things lined up that made sense. Ice cream is a product that doesn't have a whole hell of a lot of protein, but that so small amount of protein that it has, and this was important to us, obviously. I mean, we weren't making a huge amount in 2019, 2020. We were making, starting to get into the metric ton quantities kind of thing. And so what you want is a product where a small amount of protein makes a big impact for the consumer and that registers as a dairy product and really gets your mind there, right? Which we were able to do with the ice. The same thing was true for products in the cheese category, but the amount of protein required was higher. You see what I mean? Like if our goal is...
There's a lot of air in ice cream, right?
That's exactly right. Rather than being a protein-driven product or even a fat-driven product, it's like an air-driven product. Mm. A typical ice cream has about, you know, you buy it by the pint, but about 50% of that pint is air. And so that plus then you've got fat and then water and then there's some protein, right? So, you know, you can imagine that's on one extreme, and way on the other extreme is something like a sports nutrition protein beverage or something, a post-workout drink or something, right? Pre-workout drink. We wanted to be as far on the other side as possible where what we're showing is not a functional, look how much protein you can get per gram or something. Because by the way, a lot of those products don't taste all that good. Our goal was to get out there in the market with something that really screamed deliciousness and dairy indulgence and did so with a minimal amount of protein. Ice cream really nailed that for us. I mean, I hope you've tried. I hope some of our listeners have tried. You know, you can try the best darn plant-based ice cream out there and it will still taste plant-based. And people try any of the ice creams that we've launched, be it Brave Robot or Graters or Nix, and you have those ice creams, you can't tell it's not dairy. That's the goal.
And so people really also just love ice cream. Well, not everybody, but most people do.
Yeah.
Right? So it's something people love and enjoy.
Exactly.
I will say, though, just speaking from a selfish place,
please.
I hope you all do two different products. Mm-hmm. Because now that I'm on this vegetarian journey, I would love for it to be completely a vegan journey. But for me, two things are really important that I can't seem to replace right now. And one is sliced cheese and the other is cream cheese. Those are two things that I really can't replace.
Okay, so but on the cream cheese side, you know that we're doing that, right? Have you seen any of that or no?
No.
Ooh, okay, well then I've got good news for you, man. Literally the next thing we launch is cream cheese.
Yeah,
it's awesome. It's happening. We're doing, just like our ice cream, we have B2B partners. We are also throwing our own brand into the market. That one I know for sure I can talk about. It's called Modern Kitchen.
Okay.
Check it out. It's coming. And man, it's good. I can't wait for you to try it.
Awesome. I actually had a bagel with cream cheese and jelly for lunch today.
Nice. So. Cream cheese and jelly?
Yeah.
Is that a regional thing? Is that a Texas
try thing? Try it out, man. I don't know. I really enjoy it. So here's the deal. Like, I don't like just a bagel with cream cheese and nothing on it.
Yeah.
And I'm Jewish. And so I, you know, I'm a, have been.
Well, what about lox very... then, man? Come on.
Well,
your grandmother is like sobbing tears.
Yeah, but I'm supposed to be a vegetarian.
Oh, so, right. That
one. Right. And so now I can't do lox on a bagel. So I can't do the savory. And now I'm like, well, I need to put something on it and I've gone sweet. And so if you put like, you know, strawberry jam on a bagel with cream cheese, it's actually really good. So that's my substitute.
Okay. You know what? I'm not going to yuck your yum for even a second, but I will say, I know you've been in touch with our chef and there are like incredible savory things that are not very hard that you can like add to your cream cheese or sweet things if that's what you're looking for.
Okay.
You know, whatever, like chives, scallions, a little something on the skillet for a minute that isn't meat.
Yeah.
I don't know, tapenade, whatever. There's many things you can do.
Okay.
And I bet jelly's good and I should try it.
Yeah, you should just give it a go. Yeah. Right? Tell me what you think in a one sentence email. Right? Yum, not yum, I don't know.
So that was the cream cheese.
Yeah.
Sliced cheese is interesting because like, it's not real. You know, it's American cheese, right? It's processed cheese. The dairy industry calls it processed cheese.
So what about when I'm at Whole Foods and they have like the package of sliced cheese that I could get that's all different types of cheese? And
oh, that's fair. Oh, you mean like deli, for like deli sandwiches and stuff?
Yeah, for sandwiches.
Uh-huh. Now here's where that gets challenging. If you want it to melt, anyone can do that. If you want it to then like stretch and be able to kind of melt over and over the way that fucking cheese does, you really need casein. And as much as every vegan hates the analogy between vegan and gluten-free, there is one interesting analogy, which is that gluten and casein are both extremely specific and irreplaceable proteins. You just can't do with non-gluten proteins what you can do with gluten. And you can't do what casein does without casein. So we're not yet commercialized casein. We've made whey protein. And so all the non-stretchy cheese things that you can do with milk protein, we can do. But there's only one admittedly big thing that we can't yet do with our products, which is the casein like melt and stretch thing.
Well, if you all solve that, you're going to crush it.
Oh, and we're going to solve it. I mean, we have it at the lab scale. The question is like, when can we get it up to scale while also having to get our current products out more, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. I'm eagerly waiting for that. And I'm so glad that you all are going to solve.
Dude, that's the holy grail. We're on it. I mean, that's like the second most holy grail. The first one is brisket.
Yeah.
That's what I really want to do.
And so you guys also have a cake mix too, a Climate Hero Super cake mix. I want to say one thing. I have a membership program that I launched. And first of all, I say, you know, I call everybody like climate warriors. Okay. Like every time I start the podcast, I'm like that. And so I have a new membership program that it's like super climate warrior. And so I saw this and I'm like, that's just infringement. You know, like you guys put up.
wait, you're saying climate hero and climate warrior are the same thing? Like there are many ways to be a hero that don't involve warfare. You know, warfare is a very adversarial. This is a collaborative. Everyone come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. But you know, who knows? Maybe you all want to give some discount codes to the super climate warriors, right? It's like, super climate warriors, you can get a discount on your climate hero super cake mix.
Look, I mean, at the risk of like starting to make a deal happen on the air right now, you know, let's fucking do this.
Great. Awesome. You know, that's how deals get done. Right?
You've got an audience. We've got climate hero super cake. Let's do this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You guys have a bunch of different flavors, right?
I assume so. I mean, I've had the yellow cake. I can't keep track of all the amazing stuff I've tried.
Cool.
But well, what I'll tell you has been wild. There have been times that we go into the office and someone's like, hey, here's a bunch of cake, someone's birthday or something, and have the cake. Oh, thanks for the cake. Then that shit was made with our protein and we didn't even know until someone told us.
Yeah. So what is that like now that, you know, you're gone from a scrappy startup as like a lot of companies do to now like you receive some mixture from your chef that you've never had before. You're like, oh, we made this, great. Or you walk in and there's, you get what I'm getting at here. There's like, oh, there's a cake that's made from our cake mix. We have a cake mix, which I knew about it, but it's like, just things are happening.
Right.
There's so much happening, which is healthy to occur that like you might not even know about. And so you've gone from one end of the spectrum to the other. What is that like?
Well, if you'll forgive me for like bridging where I think we also wanted our conversation to go, I often think, what is it like to be Bob at Disney, right? There is so much just happening. And like, how can any one person know every detail of it? Like, you obviously can't. But for an organization of people to do great things requires trust. More than anything else, trust. So you know that amazing things are happening and the right people are in the right places. And if not, the right people will say the right things or will tell their boss they're not happy. Or all these little things that you just need to, you can't lose sleep wondering, oh my God, is person number 502 unhappy? I hope that we'll be able to help them automatically on some kind of organizational process autopilot. And so much of the journey that I don't think founders often talk about when they're like, oh, it was tough when it was three of us. Yeah, it's tough when you're three of you. It's also tough when it's 200 of you. And you have to somehow turn a three of you culture into a 500 of you culture while holding on to your humanity.
And your sleep.
And your sleep, exactly. But I think that's something that we've... If anything, I wish I had made this more of a recurring motif in our conversation, but I mean, we're millennial founders.
Yeah.
We have always done this with the intent to have a work-life balance and to do this like with sanity and mental health for us and our employees and our everyone as top of mind. And because you can imagine, like if I started this company at 22, like, oh, when's that guy going to finally settle down and get married and have kids? I hope soon enough. So like you can't do that if you're going to be a Jeff Bezos of a guy. You see what I mean? You have to be able to put the processes in place, but do so with humanity and touch and care. I think we've been able to do that. And that's why I don't think we lose sleep over how much complexity is going on. And we welcome that when we show up, someone hands us something, we know it's going to be delicious.
Look, I know it's kind of generic maybe at this point to go there, but I can only imagine that having Bob Iger on your board, first of all, what a coup. Congratulations to you. That's amazing. And just to have that, I don't know how available he is, but to even have just like a little bit of that resource of somebody with that experience managing a company as large as that and going through so many difficult periods during his tenure at Disney, like that just must be like a really amazing knowledge bank and mentor to tap once in a while. And cap this off with saying that anybody who hasn't read his book should go read it. It's pretty awesome.
Definitely. I don't know what I'm talking about because I have an analogy I want to make.
It's fine.
You can tell, like, sometimes I have an analogy in my mind. I need to voice it. Let's see if it lands. So my older sister has a young baby, almost 2 years old, and another one on the way. And like, I find myself, you know, I'm almost 30. I find myself thinking about people starting families and sort of next generations and these sorts of things. And I have to imagine, I'm actually not sure, but Bob is a grandfather, maybe whatever. But there's an analogy in mind here where like he's helping us, or he's advising us and mentoring us as we start something that's so much more of a baby than what Disney or Apple is.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, you can talk to a grandparent about raising a child, but like they're a little bit further along to get it, right. You know? Like I see how my sister talks to my mother. My sister's mother is grandma. And she's like, oh, here's how you do it. And my sister's like, well, but the world's changed a little bit. And like, my baby's different than your baby, you know? Which is interesting, but we don't even like push it to that point because we kind of know how busy he must be and how much we value the bet he's taking in even spending some of his time with us. So we try to be very discerning in what kind of advice or what kind of a question you would even bring to him. And because of that, and by the way, I don't think he would waste his time with a company that wouldn't have that kind of a discerning view of an advisor or a board member. But because of that, I mean, we've been just blown away because you're discerning about what you ask. Every single thing we ever bring to him, he is fully, like, he's pre-read the thing we've sent to him. He's come with comments. He's understands all sides of the problem. I mean, it's a level of energy that I don't have today. And it's easy to fall into the trap of wondering, like, does that mean that I can never become a Bob? I think the reality is, like, we're really in the weeds of it right now. And mm-hmm. I think, I'll tell you, we're on the right track. But it is inspirational how much time he gives us when I cannot imagine how much else he has going on.
So where is Perfect Day in 3 years? It's almost 2022. So 2025, where's Perfect Day?
Well, there's still this thing we're dealing with right now where people don't like get it, kind of,
yeah.
Right? Like I hope that we've gotten over that hump. And yeah. I'm pretty darn sure we will, because we are standing on the precipice of so many extremely sort of nationwide and international level like partnerships where we start to get out there in a way that is just everywhere. And it's not just in dairy. It's not just in animal alternatives. It's like we're viewing fermentation as a more efficient way to make the things we make. And by the way, you had half a question earlier that I'd still like to get back to of the efficiency. And I'll get back to that in a moment. But like 3 years from now, like it'd be easy to say, oh, we're selling a lot of stuff to the big companies that make a difference. And 3 years from now, it's what, 2024, I guess? It's wild to me because I in my head, when you said 3 years from now, I thought 2027. Because we are already like planning things 36 months ahead, trying to get manufacturing up and the volumes up. The industry that we're trying to help make more kind and green is a massive one, millions of metric tons. And so for us to say this year in 2021, we're going to make a little bit under 1,000 metric tons is an unthinkably large number to me 5 years ago, but is just nothing still. The humbling and sobering reality is that no matter how much it becomes, it's still nothing compared to the problem right in front of us. It's just whatever Greek mythology rock up a hill thing. It's just there's always more hill to push it up. maybe in 3 years, we'll feel like we can kind of see over the top of the hill, at least. But we don't yet. It's still an endless hill with endless rock, endless pushing.
I think there's really something there with still, despite all the progress being made, there's still that need to bring the average consumer along and get them bought, educated and bought in. And I want to make another proposition here because I'm just making deals. Yeah. I'm going to cut to like the rapid fire part of this podcast of that. I'm doing these happy hours. I know it might only be like 150 people or whatever it is. You guys should do a happy hour and serve some of the products and education of the people, because we have people coming out who are investors and founders and, you know, so on and so forth. And it's a way to that. It's a small way, but as you know, like, you know, the butterfly effect, right? Yeah. It could actually end up influencing a lot of people a few years down the road. So I'm going to sell you on that. And I encourage you all to do it, or at least
I love it. I'd love to. I mean, even like our conversation right now is part of the butterfly effect of doing South by whatever, 5 years ago.
Right. So there you exactly. go. Exactly. Let's transition to the rapid fire part of this conversation.
Okay, let me pour the rest of my drink here.
Yeah, totally. What are three books that have greatly influenced the way that you think?
I've got two off the top of my head. Let me think of a third. The first two are Shoe Dog by Phil Knight.
Yeah.
And awesome book. Definitely. Not Sapiens, but Homo Deus by Yuval Noah Harari. Right. And you know what? I'll throw in a fiction, because so often when people ask me a broker munitions, they're like, why all nonfiction? I loved the Stephen King novel where the guy goes back in time to try to stop the Kennedy assassination. You know what I'm talking about?
They made a movie out of it, right?
Yeah, they did, but I'm scared to watch it because I liked the book so much that there's, how could they do justice to it?
Second rapid fire question. What are three other startups, companies that you love that will help me become a vegan?
Well, first, I will say New Harvest, even though they're not a for-profit entity. The work they're doing, I think, lends legitimacy, like not from a PR perspective, but from a technology perspective, to all the efforts that are happening in meat and beyond in CellAg. That's one. I would say I'm hugely inspired by what we see at Modern Meadow too, which I know your viewers have seen. And, you know, partially because what we see at Modern Meadow is a willingness to adapt. It's very easy to start with one idea and just say, hey, this or the highway. But the reality is, like, the world changes and technology becomes in sharper focus. And I've seen Andras and the team at Modern Meadow, like, adapt and think of other ways of tackling the problem in a way that I found admirable. And then, you know, I just know the folks from Wildtype who are tackling seafood. Look, I haven't been lucky enough to try it yet. And maybe I'm, like, even gunning for that by saying this. But hey, I assume that if I try a prototype, because I've seen like photos and things, right? Like that one looks really good.
Will they make locks for my bagel?
I think they could. And by the way, like, look, it's not that long ago that I had locks on a bagel. And like, it's not fucking filet mignon. I think you could make that vegan pretty easily.
Okay. Cool. I'm excited for that. And, you know, to share that with my family for the holidays. And so with that being said, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you for the lovely cocktail, and a big thank you to your chef for...
I will forward the good review. Thank you so much. This has been a joy.
Yeah, totally. And I can't wait to write you a few one sentence emails over the coming year.
I don't know if you think you're calling my bluff. Like, please do it. I think I thought you were like looking like off camera to your like co-producer or something at certain points, but if you weren't, hey, you can't start something alone and not kind of go a little crazy. I only say that because Paramal and I have gone a little crazy and we didn't do it alone. Reach out anytime. I know.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, no, absolutely. I've definitely gone a little bit crazy the last month, that's for sure, you know.
Especially these last like year and a half, my God, right? What's happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like laying down. It's like, why am I doing this?
But seriously, thank you so much. And I would, you know, I'd love to do it anytime. And I think Paramal would have fun doing it too.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, hey, thank you so much and have a wonderful rest of the week.
You too.
And I can't wait for that happy hour.
We're doing it.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Cheers.